only a murmur. The crowds had been thinning through the spring, out of fear of invasion from Benito Mussolini's fascist Italy, just 30 kilometers away. Thousands of Niçois and visitors alike took refuge inland, away from the southeastern tip of France and the frontier with Italy. The few café habitués in Cour Salea that day could hear chirping birds, church bells echoing from other quarters in the city, and the fluttering of the French tricolor angled from a balcony. At the eastern end of the market, at 1 Place Charles Félix, sat a 17th-century Baroque palace bathed in sunlight. Since the 1920s, it too had been of keen interest to tourists. Behind the patinaed façade of mustardy gold lived the internationally famous artist Henri Matisse. Inside Palais Caïs de Pierla, the high-ceilinged nine-room flat on the fourth floor with its views of the market and the sea, was Matisse alone. A sight that would have been a rarity in the decades before, when the sole purpose of his wife, Amélie, daughter Marguerite, and sons Jean and Pierre, the familial raison d'être, was the creation, evaluation, and successful marketing of the father's art. We are one of those rare families whose members live in unity. Now, his children were scattered, and his 40-year marriage to Amélie was coming to an end. His sparkling niece, once a refuge, was being hollowed out by the threat of war, and his immense reputation was waning. Long-term locals no longer saw the well-built man who sailed, sculled, and took dancing lessons at the casino. At 68, Henri Matisse's strong build and square shoulders were less so. His broad, high forehead showed wrinkles, and his reddish hair and beard had turned white. Matisse had the look of a man who had never been young and would very soon be old. Another commented, "Matisse's face does not suggest his talent. He looks a healthy, well-to-do bourgeois." As always, when outside of his studio, he was conventionally dressed in woolen trousers, buttoned shirt, jacket, and hat. After meeting the artist, the young Englishman, Quentin Bell, described him as comfortably plump, assisted by an excellent tailor. Matisse, he concluded, might well be eminent in the world of insurance or real estate. Despite his sedate appearance, at the core of Henri Matisse was a seething desire to paint, which had not slackened with the passage of time. He could think and talk of nothing else but his art, said the daughter of Simon Bussy, an old art school friend of Matisse. His art devoured his life. It was a vortex sucking everything in. Matisse's revolutionary exhibit at the Salon d'Automne of 1905 had made him a star. Critics howled at the barbaric and naive forms and the color madness, but collectors took note. It took a lot of gall, guts, to paint it, Matisse said of the fauve style, but much more to buy it. The Steins and the Cohn sisters took the risk, and Matisse became king of the fauves. In the years that followed, Henri Matisse found his critical reception and respect dimmed. Older than many of his fellow modern artists, Matisse was no longer seen as a leading figure of the vanguard. The Cubists attacked him. The Surrealists ignored him. All these fellows who normally said hello turned their backs. His paintings in the 1920s were derided as facile and self-indulgent. Where once he had been recognized from New York to Moscow as one of the two giants of modernism, now Matisse was a decorative painter, while Pablo Picasso was the great renovator. Exiled from the avant-garde, Matisse found no home with the traditionalists. He was too far out in front to comprehend. His important works just before and during World War I, like Bathers by a River and The Moroccans, which he considered pivotal, left collectors and critics lost at the crossroads. To one critic, they were pathological. Another saw them as a